back together again. You and I wrapping up a very busy Tuesday show, April 13th, 2025, right here on Connecticut Today. We welcome to Connecticut Conference of Municipalities Executive Director and CEO Joe DeLong to discuss his recent op-ed critique of using the phrase Connecticut values that we hear often from Governor Ned Lamont. Republican State Senator Eric Berthel dropped by to talk about Democrats deciding apparently for the time being to back away from any new homeschooling legislation. Yankee Institute blogger Megan Portfolio discussed a social media bill being considered by state lawmakers, while CBS News correspondent Aaron Navarro briefed us on President Trump's trip to the Middle East and his recently issued drug pricing executive order. I also had a few thoughts on state lawmakers threatening a Connecticut business. So dating back, I think, to the Dan Malloy years, I first heard him use a phrase that frankly drove me nuts, drove me up a wall. Governor Malloy would, at the time, was now up in Wayne with the Maine system, wagged his finger sometimes at people that would ask honest questions and say, well, we're spending money on this because of Connecticut value. And now, unfortunately, in my opinion, that phrase is used all too often, meaning, hey, if you don't agree with us, sounds to me like, that's a values judgment. Our next guest, a return visit here. We've had him on a few times before. Joe DeLong, who is the executive director and CEO of the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities, looking out for the city's municipalities. Joe had an op-ed a few days ago in the Connecticut News Junkie. What do Connecticut values really mean? Joe DeLong, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you? Good to have you back.
Paul, it is always one of my values to come onto your show.
Thank you, sir. That's it. That's it. Rub my ego, Joe. There you go. Joe, hallelujah for you writing this, because I thought I was out on an island here. Look, we all know spending is tough and how our money is spent, but, you know, the finger wagging to me, Joe, was just so frustrating when I hear this. Why did you decide to write this?
Well, you know, I wrote it because our current governor, Governor Lamont, uses that phrase as a defense for the budgets in which he puts forward. And he talks about how he's putting forth a budget that's in line with Connecticut values. And when I look at some of the value judgments that are made within that type of public policy, which I outline in the op-ed, I really question if those truly are the values of the majority of people in Connecticut. And I don't know. I mean, I mentioned the fact that, listen, I've been here a decade.
Yeah.
I consider myself a nutmegger now, but I wasn't born and raised here.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at polling numbers that show that the governor polls at a very popular level. And so it makes me question, are these truly Connecticut values, or do people just not know and not look behind the curtain?
Yeah, that's the scary part, Joe. And I talk about this all the time. And my callers are like, hey, what's going on here with the taxes and the fees? Do people care? And, you know, Joe, I don't know. You bring up something interesting there. Do they not look behind the curtain? And, Joe, this to me is not a Democrat or a Republican or a left versus right issue. I don't care who you are. You should be, and you can do it now more than any time in history with access online. People need to be pulling that curtain back, don't they?
Well, I don't think there's any question about it. And I think if you look at the policy that's being disguised as a Connecticut value, if you look at the policy, over the last 6 years since the governor has been in office, he's given out pay raises to the government class that have outpaced inflation by the tune of about 8%. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. People deserve pay raises. They deserve merit increases. But that's clearly what he is saying is a value of his, is to be able to do those pay raises for the government class. Fine. He's also very clearly stated a value is to not increase income taxes or the capital gains tax or do anything that's going to put more pressure on the wealthy or anything that might kind of, quote, drive the wealthy out of the state. So that's a value. And I'm fine with that as well if that's one of your values. But you have to put it into balance, because on the other side, at the same time, the money that his budgets have put into public education funding have trailed inflation by $407 million a year. So where we value the state employee, we don't value the student in the classroom or the teacher in that classroom. And then on the other part of that, these policies, while they do protect the wealthy from income tax increases and from capital gains increases, we're seeing these policies lead to 20% and above property tax increases, which disproportionately impact the poor and the working class and the lower, you know, middle class and that type of thing in a very regressive way. So I just question, is that really in line with Connecticut values to trail inflation that much on public education while outpacing inflation that much on state employee pay raises and protecting the rich from tax increases while driving up tax increases on the poor? And you know, that's not a campaign speech or a Democrat or Republican. That's just a reflection of the policies. It's a direct reflection of the policies that we've seen for the past 6 years.
The guest is Joe DeLong from CCM. His op-ed, What Do Connecticut Values Really Mean? Joe, well said. And you know what should be a Connecticut value, Joe? Bipartisan, left or right, up or down. Maybe some fresh thinking. Maybe some fresh look. Some real initiative at the Capitol and stop people from screaming, well, you can't do this, or there's no way we can do this. You know, Joe, nothing drives me nuts more than people saying, well, you can't at least try to change your stance or the way you approach a problem because we've never done it that way. Well, if we keep doing it a certain way, like you say, and things continue to be out of balance and we brand that as Connecticut values, how does that make any sense, Joe? That's just a vortex, a spinning vortex that we can never get out of here, because I don't see it happening.
You know, it's funny. Most of the areas where we probably should get out of that spinning vortex are not areas where we're trying to create a unique idea or reinvent the wheel. Mm-hmm. They're simpler areas where Connecticut does things differently than the rest of the country to its own peril.
Yeah.
And if you look at that, you know, the state, not private groups like mine, we've done a lot of them. There's a lot of interest groups who do a whole lot of things, and I recognize that. But the state itself did a state tax panel study a few years back. Mm-hmm. In that state tax panel study, they brought in tax experts from all over the country to say, where is Connecticut out of line and how can we get our tax structure more in line? And that their own study came back and outlined a series of recommendations that they needed to do to just do what the rest of the country does and get in line with the rest of the country. And they looked at it and they put it up on a shelf and said, yeah, that's not how we
do
it.
That's not going to happen.
So we see this, you know, perpetually, session after session after session. And I look for, you know, doing my work, I can get so frustrated at times. But when you meet the people and you get to, there's a lot of really good people up there in Hartford,
sure,
representing their communities, doing the very best that they can with the amount of information that they have. But we also, what I have seen, again, not being native to Connecticut, mm-hmm, but I've had experience in some other states, this state is very much in a pattern of follow the leader. You know, if Governor Lamont says, oh, we can't afford to put more money into public education, legislators say, man, I'd really like to, but the governor said we can't afford it. Mm. You know, I mean, that's kind of how everything is done here, which is really somewhat unique.
Yeah, you don't hear, Joe, you're right, like you and I, obviously, because of what we do, we follow surrounding states. Like, you never see or hear of the, oh, there's an uprising in the General Assembly of Connecticut against the governor, like you do in other states, other red states and blue states here. You're right, it's business as usual, the land of steady habits here.
We are very cordial. We're very cordial to the leadership of our own parties, which, you know, I'm not saying that you should be somebody up there who's constantly trying to create chaos and mm-hmm havoc, because that's not good either. But it's okay once in a while to question your leaders and say, hey, this really doesn't do anything for my district.
Yeah.
And I really need to have a budget put in front of me that I can vote on with a straight face and go home and tell people that I did something good for them. We're just not in that pattern enough, I think, in this state to drive real meaningful change.
Yeah, it's sad. Joe, thank you. Joe DeLong, Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. Folks, check it out. It's at the Connecticut News Junkie. Joe's op-ed, What Do Connecticut Values Really Mean? Joe, thanks. Be good, and I'm sure we'll talk down the road. Thank you, sir.
Paul, thanks for the opportunity.
All right, sure. Thank you. Folks, Joe DeLong from the Connecticut Conference of Municipalities. Yeah, we just kind of chug along here in the state. But if you are sitting there in the General Assembly or listening live right here on WICC or watching C-SPAN and you say, well, geez, why are we doing that again? Well, no, we're doing it because of Connecticut values. And if you don't like it, you don't have any values. You're a bad person. Hey, big announcement today by Democrats in Hartford. They say for at least the present legislative session, now, of course, this heads into an election year next year, they've pumped the brakes, they've tapped the brakes, they've stopped on any additional regulations for homeschooled kids and parents. Now, there was a controversy now regarding whether or not this was a move to shield DCF in connection with this tragic Waterbury story we had a few months ago of this young man, now 32, kept allegedly home, imprisoned at home by his stepmom for 20 years. So joining us right now to talk about a 32nd District State Senate Republican, Eric Berthel here. Eric, good afternoon. How are you?
Hey, Paul. How are you? It's always good to be on with you. Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, appreciate it. So your compadres there on the other side of the aisle said, well, forget it. It's an election year, so we're not going to do this. But what exactly happened or didn't happen?
Well, Paul, we saw advocacy truly in action a week ago yesterday here. I'm at the Capitol today. You know, we're both the House and the Senate are in session as we approach the last 3 weeks of this regular session. But we had 2,200 people come into the legislative office building last Monday, all homeschool parents and their children, advocating against really what is a terrible way for us to do business. Not the first time that we've done or tried to do things this way in Hartford. But, you know, you can't all of a sudden create, you know, new rules and regulations without it having gone through the proper process here in Hartford,
sure.
Which, you know, as the bill is proposed, you get a public hearing, you get advocates, you get people who are opposed. Instead, this had this move forward, we were fearful as Republicans here in both the Senate and the House that they would have jammed some language into the, you know, the infamous budget implementer, which is where all the bad things go, in addition to the instructions, if you will, as to how we will spend hard-earned taxpayer money. But really, Paul, the bottom line is that the Democrats realized this was not a group to mess with this year and pulled the plug on this. You can't blame what happened in Waterbury with that one child who was not a homeschooled child, by the way. He was withdrawn from Waterbury Public Schools, but not as to do homeschooling. But you can't blame the tragedy and the pure, Paul, I don't know, it's like evilness of what that woman did to that man.
Yeah.
And then try to blame it on homeschoolers, which are some of the most religious and, you know, and caring people that you see and concerned about the family unit and concerned about doing what's right and making sure their children are educated in a proper way. And to blame homeschoolers for what happened in Waterbury was just so disingenuous. And by the way, Paul, I'm sorry, just to get this last thought out before I stop talking. The other piece is that meanwhile, back at on the farm, if you will, you have that horrific story that you and I talked about a few weeks ago with Alicia graduating from Hartford Public High School.
Yeah.
Illiterate, can't read or write, and no one. We've asked repeatedly, I have asked by letters to the commissioner of the Department of Education repeatedly, what are you doing to address the issue that we have at least one that we know of, one student that graduated from Hartford Public School System, illiterate, and was handed a diploma that said she met the requirements for graduation. Where is the travesty there? Where is the people complaining? Where are the people complaining about that? Instead, they go after homeschoolers. It was the dumbest thing I think I've seen in 11 years here in Hartford.
And Eric, along with that, now I know there's an investigation going on, but we had people from both sides of the aisle right after this horrible Waterbury story broke a few months ago saying, hey, we need answers from DSS and from DCF. Have you guys and gals heard anything about that yet? Are they saying, hey, we're working on it? Any indication as to how this happened? Are they stonewalling you? Have you heard anything on this?
You know, we have not gotten formal responses back. We have what we're hearing is it's under investigation. Of course, we have, you know, we have the shakeup, the latest shakeup with the commissioner in the Office of Healthcare.
Yeah.
Commissioner
Gifford.
Whatever it is,
yeah.
Right? So
yeah.
With Commissioner Gifford and her signing off on some bad things from a couple of years ago. But no, I, Paul, quite honestly, if I can be anything, it's honest.
Yeah.
Right? I think that this was a distraction.
Mm.
Going after the homeschoolers was a veiled attempt to distract people from what was really going on with DCF and DSS, and not for nothing, the Waterbury Public School System. And I won't cast aspersions on the Waterbury Police, because I know from a lot of years of doing EMS in Waterbury, they're a good group of people. But the police should have been called more often, perhaps, to find out how does this child just disappear from school, and no one cares about it until 22 years later as an adult. He sets his room on fire to escape the prison that he's in by this woman that held him captive all those years. And nobody knows. No one cares. No one figured that out. And now we're going to blame the homeschooling community on that. I don't think Hollywood could write a crazy script.
Absolutely not. Absolutely. Eric Berthel. Eric, thanks, man. Be good, and we'll chat down the road. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Paul. Take care.
Yep. Republican State Senator Eric Berthel, by the way, he represents District 32, which, if you wonder, is Bethlehem, Bridgewater, Brookfield, Middlebury, Oxford, Roxbury, Seymour, Southbury, Washington, Watertown, and the fine people in Woodbury. Our weekly check-in every Tuesday at this time with Megan Portfolio, blogger at the Yankee Institute. Check out the Hartford Portfolio blog and column is Megan. Like I said, we have her on because she goes page by page, line by line, through these 400-page bills and watches hours of CTN, and somehow she is still sane. Good afternoon, Ms. Portfolio. How are you?
Oh, well, I'm great. You said I was sane.
You're not?
First. I follow the Connecticut legislature. It's hard to be sane.
You've got two interesting pieces here. Number one, let's talk about, and God, I talk about this a lot. Melissa, our morning show host, does. Lisa, our midday show host, does. About parents and teens and social media and what they're exposed to. And we all want to do something about it, Megan, here on the state level, too. But we can't just seem to come to a consensus on this. So I guess there's a bill floating around about this. What's going on with that?
Yeah, I'm going to file this bill under things the legislature can do, but probably shouldn't do.
All right.
And so it's probably going to get called this week. That's the rumor I'm hearing. It's a House bill.
Okay.
It's backed by Attorney General William Tong.
Yeah.
And essentially, it just prohibits social media platforms from showing, oh, my God, I'm going to butcher this word, algorithmically produce content to minors unless their age is verified and they get, like, their parents' permission.
Sure.
And it also defaults all the settings to allowing them to have access 1 hour a day to social media.
Mm-hmm.
It also blocks notifications between midnight and 6 a.m.
Got it.
And yes, this sounds like a great idea, but this is the government, you know, coming in and parenting. Parents need to parent. We can't have the government coming in and, like, being the parents. So like I said, it's coming up this week. Tong's supporting it, but it's interesting because he's kind of comparing this. It's kind of, I'll classify it as a mental health crisis.
I mean,
we can't deny it.
Yeah.
We see the kids on the phones constantly. They're not out playing like we used to do.
Yeah.
So it is a problem that needs to be addressed. But I mean, going after, like, these big headlines because it's Meta or TikTok or what's the other one? X.
Yeah.
It's too far reaching, and we're actually, you know, going against our First Amendment rights by doing this, which courts have been finding recently because other states have been trying to do this. Oh, I lost my train of thought because this bill got me so angry.
No, I understand what you're saying. And the other states that do this, and I'm kind of parting company with you and a lot of people on this. I just think we have to try something. But you're right. The challenges have come that say, hey, this isn't an infringement on those kids' First Amendment rights. The
right.
question I want to see answered is, well, wait a minute. At what level, at what age does a child have a First Amendment right? In other words, is it 5? Is it 8? Is it 11? Like, I understand what the arguments are against this, but at what point does the parent get to say, or do we as a society and say, no, that's just too stinking young. I'm sorry. And it's not easy. I get it. I understand.
No, it's not easy. And the First Amendment isn't easy. And sometimes it's very uncomfortable. There's things that I see online that I don't agree with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you're like, why are they allowed to say this? But
yeah.
They are allowed to say, and they are allowed to do things. And we already have laws on the book, Paul. We actually have a law right now that requires the platforms. They call it exercising reasonable care when they're offering, you know, their services to kids. So they have to do their best to avoid, you know, exposing kids to deceptive practices, to any kind of like financial mm-hmm. or physical injury, invasions of privacy. So we already have these laws on the books. And it's just this is one of these feel good things. I mean, it passed out of committee unanimously.
Yeah.
It's got bipartisan mm-hmm. support. But kids, they're going to find workarounds. It's not the place for the government to do this. And I'm not trying to say that this isn't an issue and
no.
kids aren't stressed out.
I get
and there isn't like bullying issues, but to do it the way they're doing it, it's almost like, are you trying to get headlines? Are you trying to be during one of the press conferences on this, Attorney General Tong made a point to point out that one of the biggest lawsuits in the state that we've ever had was the tobacco lawsuit,
oh, yeah.
which is again like an addiction thing.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had the opioid settlements, again, another addiction thing. And this is like his next, like, it's like he wants like the number one biggest lawsuit. Cause he made a point of pointing out that, at the time, A.G. Blumenthal,
yeah.
well, of course,
well,
we all know why,
but go ahead.
I need to say, but I mean, there are ways to actually go after this without being so intrusive going after someone's First Amendment rights or even being so burdensome to businesses. I mean, they could do a simple thing. This is not sexy. You're not going to get the big headlines.
Okay.
You're not going to get your big lawsuits. But I mean, why not at the app store level include parental controls? I mean, no parental control is perfect. I mean, I grew up when they started putting the M for mature on video games and CDs for, the compact disc from back in the day. And, you know, it didn't stop anyone. It didn't change anything. It was just this burdensome regulation that they imposed. And if anything, it made me, I actually looked for the video games with the M on it because those were more fun for me.
You wanted to be edgy. Hey, before we have to scoot here, one other thing, and in about the 90 seconds we have left, we're doing green energy again. We're doing another bill. And again, with the uber expensive heat pumps, which cost people's electric bills to skyrocket. Tell me we're doing this again. Are we doing this again?
Yeah, we're doing. Well, the advocates have been. So this is what I try to tell people. Get involved in your government. Make sure you call your legislatures because the people on the other side are. And they are making a huge, huge push to take one of the major climate bills in the House is HB 5004, mm-hmm. which is kind of like from last year's Green Monster, but not, it's like not a monster anymore. It's kind of like a know-nothing bill at this point.
Yeah.
When they proposed it, there were some costly items in there, like the heat pumps, like changing over our state buildings to be, you know, more energy efficient.
Okay.
Meanwhile, no one even goes to the office anymore.
I know.
So they stripped all of these expensive items out, and now they're trying to do a shell game and switch them around and shove them in other bills here and there. One that one of the things that did get taken out that they want to put back in is they want to try to phase out nuclear energy, and the gateway drug for that is to open up a PURA docket to explore phasing it out, and then we go from there.
And then what are we going to do?
This is crazy.
They're going to get rid of we get the nuclear energy from the plant out east, and we get rid of that, and we replace that with what exactly? Rhetorical question.
We're going to replace it with wind and solar, apparently. And then we're going to just all freeze in the those of us who can't afford generators will just freeze, I guess, in the winter.
Yeah, we're going to turn off Millstone.
Like I say in my house, because I hate when the heat is like over 70. Put a hat and mittens on.
Oh, you're like me. Oh, my God. My God. I tell all the people I work with, it's easier to warm up than cool down.
I'm old and grumpy, so I'm like, put on a hat. Put on mittens. You'll be fine.
Me too. Megan Portfolio, check it out. The Hartford Portfolio, the Yankee Institute. Megan, thank you. Appreciate it.
Bye, Paul.
Thanks. Our daily check-in with CBS News. See what's going on. Our buddy, our pal, Aaron Navarro is here. Aaron, it's Paul here at WICC. How are you, man?
Paul, good to be with you.
Staying busy, I would think. You got a bunch of stuff going on there, including this executive order, Aaron, signed on drug prices. This was like, wow, how is this going to work? And Aaron, is there going to be pushback from the drug companies here?
Yeah, good to be with you. Yeah, this was, it feels like forever ago now, but it was just earlier this week on Monday, this executive order that lowers drug prices in part by directing his Health and Human Services Secretary, RFK Jr., to set, quote, clear targets for price reductions across all markets in the U.S. What the administration is trying to do here is essentially make sure that whatever the U.S. Consumer pays for a prescription, that it is the lowest price possible for a developed country. What the White House has been vague, though, is how they get pharmaceutical companies to agree to this. What the White House has said is that Secretary RFK Jr. will impose this pricing called bio rulemaking. There will be investigations into pharmaceutical companies that don't necessarily comply. But the specifics on how that would happen are not quite there yet.
And Mr. Trump, as we speak, wrapping up, I guess, the first of a long day in the Middle East here with a little bit of controversy here. But in remarks earlier today, Aaron, I guess he wants to try an entire reset in that area as he's now in the Middle East.
Yes, yeah, specifically with Syria. And this is a country that had sanctions from the U.S. in place since the civil war started there in 2011, when they were under the regime of dictator Bashar al-Assad, who had just been ousted from the country months ago. And this is an economic game changer, as they had essentially been cut off from the world marketplace through the U.S. sanctions, which Trump himself called, quote, brutal and crippling. The fact that he's lifting these sanctions now definitely resets the tone between the two countries, but also looks to kind of push back against any influence that Iran has in this country as well, as they have been essentially using this country and transporting weapons to Lebanon through Syria. It's not necessarily a U.S. investment in Syria, but the fact they're trying to reset the relationship is definitely notable.
The chess pieces move on that Middle Eastern board. Aaron, thank you. Aaron Navarro, CBS News. Aaron, take care, be safe, and we'll talk down the road. Thank you.
Thank you, Paul.
All right, appreciate it. Our buddy, our pal there in D.C., Aaron Navarro. We try to give you a daily check-in as to what's going on in the White House. You know, today is one of these days that as much as I bite my tongue and maybe bite my lip and bite wherever else I can out of frustration, I have this unending desire to tell the majority who governs us in Hartford to mind your own damn business about what a legally operating company in this state can do legally according to the Commerce Clause. You know, when I was growing up, I used to hear this around my house, around my mom and dad, and around, you know, my big old jolly Italian family, that there was kind of an unwritten rule. If there was no crime being committed, if things were being done because certain people wanted them done, whatever, and if you were not in a position to question any of that, I was always met with, and as I got older, I heard this as well, I was always met with, mind your business. or extend, you know, adding a little bit of spice to it. Mind your own damn business, or darn, or whatever you want to say. So I was raised with that philosophy, that no matter how passionate you should be on something, if it's none of your business, none of your business. And I point to this because this just shows that some of our lawmakers in Hartford, not all of them, some of these people are not serious people. They may have all kinds of titles. They may have a lot of money, but they're lacking a basic cognizance of seriousness about them. And I give you this. Now, we're round and round with this story. This is round two of this story. You may remember a few months ago, there was a legitimate company, a commercial company, in the town of Hamden. Apparently it's a chemical company or a chemical pharmacy, whatever. And they were kind of warned by the know-it-alls of the General Assembly, primarily the Democratic majority there, hey, we're not happy with what you're doing. Now, mind you, there were no allegations of illegality here. There were no allegations of being underhanded. There were no allegations of wage theft. There were no allegations of tax cheating. There is a company in Hamden, and the name of the company is called Absolute Standards. They're a chemical company. All right. You need chemicals for a lot of stuff, including in some states, not here, of course, in Connecticut, because, oh, we know better. You need chemicals for executions. And there was finger waving at this company a couple, three, four, 5 months back. And then it kind of calmed down because the company says, hey, we're not making this chemical anymore. Well, apparently they are. And on the company website, you can buy quantities of a chemical called pentobarbital, which is used in executions, physician-assisted suicide, and veterinary euthanasia of animals. Sometimes you have to put animals down. So apparently there is now more finger-wagging again, and again, the unserious, the not-serious, the arrogant, know-it-all Democratic majority in Hartford, that they're not happy. Ooh, they're not happy with Absolute Standards, a company in Hamden, a chemical company in Hamden, who is selling 1 milliliter units of pentobarbital, which is not a lot. You don't need a lot, for $495. The substance is administered at the start of the execution process to render capital punishment subjects unconscious before the deadly cocktail of the stuff that actually kills them is injected. The company was the target of a segment on HBO's Last Week Tonight with John Oliver last year. Ooh, John Oliver, ooh. There's a guy I want setting public policy here. So now you have these know-it-all, arrogant Democrats in Hartford wagging their finger again at a legal company operating legally in the state, not apparently breaking any laws, and making something that is legal to be sold, not just for executions, but as we mentioned here, for many veterinarians. Sometimes you have to put an animal down. What would these know-it-alls rather these vets do? Use a gun? Might be more fun. But again, two of the people clamoring the loudest about this, State Senator Saud Anwar of South Windsor and State Rep Josh Elliott of Hamden, apparently have nothing more to worry about. They're not worried about lowering your electric bill. They're not worried about keeping Utes from stealing cars. They're not worried about kids ingesting marijuana. No, they're all hepped up about capital punishment in a state that doesn't even have capital punishment. That's why you're paying for the two Cheshire Home Invasion Massacre dirtbags for the rest of their lives. But I digress. I'll give you more. I have some of what they said coming up. It's nauseating. It's so arrogant and self-serving. But that begs today's question. At 203-333-9422, 333-WICC, talk or text, should state lawmakers in Hartford have the ability to ban legitimate local companies from producing and selling illegal substance? These are legal chemicals. What's next? Are they going to wag their finger at an electric company that sells wiring for a electric chair? What's wrong with that? What about a company that may make valves, gas valves, that are used for, I don't know, a gas chamber somewhere? Are they going to wag their fingers at that, right? Oh, they're so self-conscious. So apparently there are some members, according to their quotes here that I read about here in the Hartford Courant, that are so full of themselves. Get this. There's a level of arrogance here that I never used to see years ago. And you have some of these Democrats in Hartford, among them Josh Elliott from Handen, C.C. Marr from Wilton, who are now threatening to pass a law. I mean, get this now. By the way, this is Connecticut Insider. I'm sorry. It's not the current. But nonetheless, this is, you know what this is? It's lunacy. It's nuts. I would ask any one of these legislators and ask anyone within the sound of my voice who thinks this is right, please explain this to me. Where does anybody get off saying that a private company in the state of Connecticut, apparently operating within the law, should be prohibited from making, producing, or selling a chemical compound that what? Our exalted leaders in Hartford don't agree with? You say Trump is a threat to freedom. Really? Have you seen what the majority in Hartford is doing? This is nuts. This is crazy. Saud Anwar said Monday after seeing pentobarbital on the Absolute Standards website. Anwar said that since the state's 2012 repeal of the death penalty, Connecticut has a well-known public policy against capital punishment. Yes, Senator, and there's a difference between public policy of a state and private commerce. He said, quote, "It's in compliance with the values that the majority of people in Connecticut have decided over a decade." No, Senator, you folks in the General Assembly have decided it. Because prior to the idiotic reversal of the death penalty by Governor Dan Malloy, most people in Connecticut, if I recall the polling on this, most people wanted the death penalty to at least still be on the books. State Senator C.C. Marr, Democrat Wilton, "I stand with Connecticut values that are against the death penalty." So please explain this to me, especially if you're a Democrat, if you're a liberal, if you're a progressive. Listen, you can be anti-death penalty. That's not the issue here. But please explain to me where, and unless they're just bored, unless the Democratic majority in Hartford is really bored, unless they just don't feel like trying to lower electric rates, unless they don't feel like tightening the laws on marijuana, or maybe tightening the laws on juveniles, jacking cars. But no, now we have to, I mean, think about what's happening here, folks. We have a state government. The same people who whine and bitch and moan about Donald Trump, we have this government in Connecticut, the people that many of you vote for, threatening a, from what everything is indicated here, a legally operating company. It is mind-numbing. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. Pentobarbital is apparently manufactured by this Hamden company. It's used in physician-assisted suicides. Well, I guess they're for that, right? A lot of people in Hartford, they want that assisted suicide bill. So you're okay with a pentobarbital for that, I guess. Euthanasia of animals? I don't know. Are a bunch of you veterinarians up there? How would you then put down an animal? Oh, but it would probably be okay for vets. But if the company is shipping it out of state to use, in executions in states that admittedly have different policies than Connecticut, you're suddenly going to be, so let me guess, people like Josh Elliott and Sawed Anmar and C.C. Maher, you're suddenly becoming the General Assembly, the legislature, the state assembly for these other states? Oh, is that how it works? Did I miss that? I must have missed the memo on that. Mind-numbing. I mean, the arrogance. Man, if you look up arrogance in Wikipedia or online or Central Casting, man, they send you this reference right out of the General Assembly. 203-333-9422, 333-WICC. So I'll ask you, maybe I'm wrong on this. Maybe you will appreciate this. Maybe you approve of this. I don't know what to tell you. Should state lawmakers in Hartford be allowed to ban, which is what they're thinking of doing right now? Imagine that. You run a legitimate business selling something legitimately that's not violating any federal rules, apparently, to other states legally, and the do-gooders in Hartford and the state of Connecticut will not let you just do your business. It is mind-numbing. They're worried about the death penalty when most of these people in Hartford would have drive-through abortions okayed if they had the chance. Mind-numbing. The arrogance. The two-faced, pedantic, if you will, manner of these people. These are not serious people. These are not serious people. They cannot be. If they can say this with a straight face, these people are not serious.